Well, thank you. Thank you for the invitation. So here are the Italian team, my coauthors. And I'll try, so I'm feeling like a teaching assistant, so I'll have to try to explain what I understand from Gianni's talk. So to fix ideas, I'll consider a model. So you've heard about it, the weakly asymmetric simple exclusion. You have n sites. You have an exclusion rule which allows only one particle of the site. Jump particles jump. There is a slight asymmetry to the right. So here will be epsilon. So the particles jump with rate epsilon plus 1 over 2n to the right and epsilon minus 1 over 2n to the left. And also at the boundaries, you have creation and destruction of particles. So on the right-hand side, particles are created at rate rho 1, this is a rho, and they are destructed at rate 1 minus rho 1, and the same thing happens on the left. So I'll fix rho 0 to be smaller than rho 1, epsilon will be fixed, strictly positive. And so what you have, it's competing phenomena here, so the particles have a drift towards to the right. On the other hand, since rho 1 is bigger than rho 0, more particles are created on the right than on the left. So the boundary effect has creates a drift of particles from right to hand. So you have this competitive phenomena. So in fact, if a particle is created at n minus 1, it has a probability of order 1 over n with a factor which depends on epsilon to entering the system and then dying at the left-hand side, and therefore probability of order 1 minus 1 over n to die the same place where it was created. So you have this effect of, well, a drift created by the boundary competing with the drift inside of the bulk dynamics. So, well, what will be interesting, so eta will be just in this slide the configuration. You have stationary state, which will be denoted by nu. And what we'll be interested in, it's in the evolution of the density of particles. So pi and t will be the empirical density of particles. And this is the object we would like to study. So if you rescale time by n squared and you let your process evolve, what you'll be able to show is that the density of particles evolves according to this Burgers viscous equation. So you have here epsilon in front of the Laplacian, so these indices represent the derivatives with respect to time and space. So if you start with a certain density profile, you let time evolve, it will evolve according to this equation. This equation has globally attractive stationary solution, which I will denote by rho epsilon. And you can compute the current maintained by this stationary solution, which I will call J epsilon. This is just given by F of rho epsilon minus epsilon times the derivative of rho epsilon. And if epsilon is chosen appropriately, epsilon given by denoted by phi, the chemical potentials, and I choose epsilon to be the inverse of the difference of the chemical potentials at the boundary, well, the current will be zero. While if I choose epsilon greater than epsilon zero, you'll have a current to the left, so in the same direction as the one created by the boundary drift. While if epsilon is small, you have now a current against the current created by the boundary effect. So we'll be interested here in the case where you have a current against the boundary. Well, once you know the typical behavior, you'd like to study the fluctuations of the system. And this in terms of probability, it's called the large deviations. So they were first proved for some other model by Kipnis-Ola and Varadin, and they used in order to prove the large deviation, the convexity of the rate functional. And later, Jeremy, Vesenkalu, and Varadin presented a method which avoids convexity, so which allows you to prove the large deviations from the hydrodynamical limit without using the convexity of the functional. So we'll need that here. So if I call sigma the mobility, and if you fix now a trajectory, which I will call u, different from the one given by the hydrodynamic equation, well, you pay a cost to observe this trajectory. And how you do that? Well, you take the hydrodynamic equation, which is written here, then you consider this equation as an equation for h. So you find an h, which in fact represents a drift, so you add to your system a drift, which turns the trajectory you fixed a typical one. So you solve this equation in h to find which is the drift you need to introduce in order to turn u the typical trajectory. And then with this h, you can compute the cost. The cost will be given by this time integral. So this is the action functional we want to study. And it gives you, the cost to observe a trajectory which is not the typical one in the time interval minus t zero. Well, we can write this action functional as an integral of an h minus one norm. Well, the exact expression will not play a role, but we will interpret that as a Lagrangian in order to apply the Hamiltonian formalism. So, well, here's the action functional we will examine in detail. So this is the cost to observe a trajectory in a time interval minus t zero. So now if you fix an infinite trajectory going from minus infinity to zero, well, the cost of this trajectory will be just, well, we take the cost in the time interval. So this is just take u and restrict it to minus t zero, compute its cost, and then send t to infinity. So you have the final cost of your trajectory. And now you define the quasi-potential. So the quasi-potential will be the cost of the minimal trajectory which connects the stationary profile to a fixed profile rho. And what we would like to investigate is this Z of rho. The first result, which was proved by Bodino and Jacomin and then by Farfan, says that, well, this quasi-potential, it's the large deviational functional for the stationary large deviations. So you remember you have a stationary state, you have a law of large numbers under the stationary state, which tells you that the typical density profile will be rho bar. Now you want to study what is the cost of observing another profile. Well, the cost of observing another profile was proved to be V of epsilon by Bodino, Jacomin, and Farfan, and generalizing the ideas of Van and Friedling. Well, there are two problems. So we have an expression for the large deviation functional, but this functional is expressed through a variational problem, a time-dependent variational problem, which is quite complicated to solve. So our goal here is to obtain a static variational formulation of this quasi-potential, and then to investigate which is the trajectory which minimizes this cost. So we'll introduce, in order to try to understand that, the Hamiltonian formalism. As I said, we can understand this action functional as a time integral of a Lagrangian. Well, so here is the Lagrangian. Associated to this Lagrangian, you have the Legendre transform, which gives you the Hamiltonian. Is you can write the explicit form of the Hamiltonian. And once you have this Hamiltonian, you can derive the canonical equations of motions, which are these ones. So what I will say now in the next few slides, it's purely... Yes. Yeah, it's what? But this H, and which I'm thinking of H as the drift in the system. But this is, for the moment, well, it's purely formal because we can't give a sense to these equations. So you see, well, we have this minus Laplacian which is appearing here. But anyway, let's see what we can do with these equation of motions. And as I said, well, if you observe here what you have is exactly the equation which appears in the last deviation. So if I go back, if I want to estimate the cost of trajectory, the equation which appears is this one, where H should be understood as a drift that you introduce in your dynamics in order to turn U the typical trajectory. And this is exactly the first equation, the equation for U. So I mean, thinking of H as the drift. So this is the equation of motions. Rho bar 0, it's a fixed point. So let's define MS and MU as the stable and unstable manifolds for this equation of motion. So MS will be all the pairs which converge when under the flow to the fixed point when time goes to infinity, and the unstable manifold, those which converge to the hyperbolic point when time goes to minus infinity. And of course, this stable manifold and unstable are, since the energy is conserved by the dynamics and the energy of rho bar 0 is 0, well, these unstables are subsets of this manifold. And of course, you know that the pair rho 0 for any profile rho belongs to the stable manifold because, well, if you take 0, it's a solution, and rho, when h is equal to 0, it's given by the hadronic equation, which we know converge to rho bar. Okay, so now assume that the unstable manifold is Lagrangian, in the sense that if you take any closed path in the unstable manifold and you compute this integral, you get 0. In this case, you can define a prepotential, W, as, well, you take a path starting from the fixed point to rho h, any path rho, and you just define W of rho h as the integral. And this is well defined because you're assuming that it's Lagrangian. So you have a prepotential, and the claim is that the quasi-potential is given by the infimum of the prepotential over all pairs rho h. Well, let's see how we could prove this bound. So I'll give you a formal derivation, and then I'll try to give a precise proof. So let's prove first the upper bound. So V is given by an infimum. So we need to show, to present one trajectory for which this inequality holds. Which one will be? Well, you fix a rho h in the unstable manifold. You just take uh, UH as the solution of the canonical equation. So since they belong to the unstable manifold, you know that they will converge as t goes to infinity to the fixed point. Therefore, if you remember that the prepotential, it's defined as the integral of this expression between minus infinity to 0. Since you are following the equation of motion, you can add the energy because it's equal to 0. Well, since you're following, since L is the Legendre transform and this is the conjugate, this is exactly the Lagrangian of U and UT. And V, the quasi-potential, is defined as the infimum. So you have proved your upper bound for the quasi-potential. So now let's see how we prove a lower bound. So here we need to show that any, since the quasi-potential is an infimum, we show that any path satisfies this bound. So you fix again a rho and a trajectory U going from the fixed point to 0. So here's the value of the quasi-potential, and you need to show that this value is bounded below by the prepotential, the infimum of the prepotential. Well, since you know, well, you take the infimum is an extremum of path, therefore it satisfies the Euler-Lagrange equation. So if I call h the conjugate momentum of u, I know that uh solves the canonical equation. I know, because u was chosen in this way, that u as t time converges to minus infinity converges to rho bar. But I need also h to converge to zero when times converges to minus infinity. So I'll have to show that. So I'll assume for the moment that I can prove that. In this case, remember, the cost is given by this time integral of the Lagrangian. Since u is the conjugate momentum, L, it's nothing more than this difference. Again, h is converging, so it belongs, the pair uh, h is converging to the hyperbolic point, so it belongs to the unstable manifold. In particular, its energy is equal to zero. So this, again, shows that v is equal to this time integral, which is, by definition, a w of rho h0, which is greater than the infimum. So this gives you the strategy we'll try to use in order to prove that the quasi-potential is given by the infimum of the pre-potential. Of course, this is, as I said, formal, because we have no idea how to define this equation of motion to give a sense to them. But before I go to a more rigorous proof, let me just remark that remark on uniqueness. Imagine that you have two minimizers of the prepotential for some profile rho. So you have two minimizers. To each of them, you have the solutions of the equation of motions, u and h. With that, if you remember that we just prove that v of rho is given by this expression, so that we have obtained here two different paths, u1 and u2, which minimize. So what I'm saying is that if you have more than one solution for the static variational problem involving the prepotential, you get non-uniqueness of the variational problem, the dynamical one, the one for the quasi-potential. Okay, so now let's go to a more rigorous proof. Well, what you have, it's the hydrodynamical limit and the action functional. You define these stable and unstable manifold, but you have no idea what they are because you can't make a sense of the equation of motions. So even the definition of the prepotential is not clear. So the first step will be to try to find a prepotential, some functional which will play the role of the prepotential. And to do that, well, if you can, if everything is, if the equation of motion is well defined, everything I said could be made rigorous, and you would have. Well, if you can define the unstable manifold, if you know the equation of motion, you'll be able to define this in principle. I mean. Sorry? Sure, sure. This is why that doesn't make sense, but he's.
Unstable manifold as a manifold.
Okay, so, well, I will define it. So I'll define it. So what we'll do is the following. So you have this Lagrangian, and you define your quasi-potential as the infimum. Fine. So something you can do, it's you can make a variation on rho to get from this variational problem an equation for the quasi-potential. So the So here's the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, and what appears here is the functional derivative of the quasi-potential. And in our case, you can write the Hamilton-Jacobi equation explicitly, and this is how it looks. Then you can start trying to find a solution for this Hamilton-Jacobi equation. So we'll try to find the quasi-potential as the solution. Well, problem is that this equation, it's very hard to solve, and it has been solved only in very few cases. So everything I said up to now was absolutely general, in particular the deviation, well, the large deviation, the static large deviation with the rate function given by the quasi-potential. This works in any dimension for almost all models. But to solve this Hamilton-Jacobi equation, now we are able to do it only in very few cases. And we started with the symmetric simple exclusion process, and we could do it only after seeing the explicit formula for the quasi-potential obtained by Derrida, Leibovitz, and Speer. So using this Derrida representation of the stationary state as a product of matrix, they could derive a static variational problem for the quasi-potential. So once we saw the solution, we could find the solution of the Hamilton-Jacobi equation and then make all the machinery work. And as we did for the exclusion process, we can do it for other models, but very few, all one-dimensional. And here we, for instance, will use strongly that the mobility is equal to the current. So here's the equation, and what we can show, so here again is the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, our starting point. What we can show is that S prime of, defined as this convex function, that S prime of rho minus phi is equal to zero, so that will be the solution of the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, if phi satisfies this equation, which I will call the DLS equation. So we have here a solution of the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. You fix rho, you solve this equation, you find one phi, and you can show that the Hamiltonian is equal to zero. So if you look here, what v, the functional derivative of v, should be equal to s prime of rho minus phi. On the other hand, we are looking for functional. If you take the derivative with respect to phi, you get, well, you expect it to solve the Euler-Lagrangian equation, so it should have this form. The Euler-Lagrangian equation for the functional we are looking at should be this equation, and therefore we get this is our candidate for the prepotential. So solving the Hamilton-Jacobi equation gives you a candidate for the prepotential. And what happened in all models that we faced so far was that the prepotential was either convex or concave in phi. While if you take here epsilon small, we don't have a concave or convex function. So before, since you had concave or convex, you had only one critical point. So this one might present more than one critical point, and we can show that in fact it is the case when epsilon is small. But anyway, so we started with the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, and solving the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, we found a functional which will play the role of the prepotential. So we expect the quasi-potential, v, to be the infimum over all phi of this expression. So this again, our functional, so let's call f the set of critical points of this functional for a fixed profile rho. and let's call P the solution of the DLS equations, which are the Euler-Lagrangian equation for this function. So first thing we can, so let me now state all the results we can prove. The first one is that, well, all critical points are solutions of the DLS equation. Now, if you define, as I said, F as the infimum of this prepotential, and well, let's take now the difference to for the quasi the, this function to be zero at the fixed point, we have an identity between the quasi-potential and this functional. So we obtained in this way a static variational formula for the quasi-potential. And then we have some results about uniqueness and non-uniqueness. So all results are perturbation arguments. So we know that for epsilon up to epsilon zero, for instance, there is only one critical point. So in particular, we can say that if, well, there is uniqueness up to epsilon one. So there is an epsilon one which is smaller than epsilon zero, such that for any epsilon between epsilon one and epsilon zero, well, solution of DLS equation to critical points of our functional are singletons. So we have still a uniqueness bit below epsilon zero. And then also, if difference in the chemical potential are small, we can still show that there is only one critical point. And also, if rho, so the profile, it's smooth and strictly increasing, there is also only one one critical point. On the other hand, there is an epsilon 2. Now we know that for the totally asymmetric process, there is more than one minimizer. So we can show that, doing some perturbation argument, that if epsilon is small, and as epsilon, when epsilon goes to zero, in fact, we can show that this functional converges to the functional of the totally asymmetric process. So we can prove here that if epsilon, there is an epsilon 2, small, such that for any epsilon smaller than this epsilon 2, we can find a profile for which there is more than one critical phi. And in particular, the quasi-potential is not differentiable in these. So, well, we can prove that V is differentiable in some sense only if phi of, at rho, only phi of rho is a singleton. So V is not differentiable at points for epsilon smaller than this epsilon 2. So these are the results. So now let me try to explain how we make sense of that formal argument concerning the Hamiltonian formalism. So I want to prove first an upper bound for the quasi-potential. So I said this is given by an infimum, so I just need to show that there is a trajectory which satisfies this inequality. So we have seen that S prime of rho minus phi is the solution of the Hamilton-Jacobi equation. So it will be interesting to introduce, to replace h, the variable h, by this variable phi. So let me define phi as S prime of rho minus h. So now the fixed point of the Hamiltonian dynamics will be, well, I didn't change one variable, so it's still rho bar. And instead here, the fixed point was h equal to zero, so now it becomes S prime of rho epsilon. So the new fixed point is that one. And if you rewrite your equations in terms of these new variables, these are the equations you get. So you still, well, you have a minus epsilon appearing here, so you can't make sense of these equations. But what I claim is that we can define something which will play the role of the unstable manifold. So recall that this is the DLS equation. So I fix the rho, and I find a solution of the DLS equation, which I call phi. Well, what I claim is that this object, this manifold, will play the role of the unstable manifold. So, which means what? Means that if I take rho and phi and I take the equations of motions backwards, they will converge to the fixed point. This is what I have to prove. Well, you might be very skeptic because these equations are very bad. Well, our luck is that we can transform this equation in phi as an autonomous equation. You have here, u is appearing only here. Sigma is rho 1 minus rho, so sigma prime is 1 minus 2 rho. So you know that rho is given by this expression. So you take 1 minus 2 rho, you get an expression in phi, you replace it here. So you see, for instance, and you want this equation backward in time. So you'll change t in minus t, so you'll get minus signs here around. Fine. Let's see what happens with this factor, for instance. You have epsilon, the second derivative. Well, backward in time will give you a minus. On the other hand, you have here a minus, and there is 1 minus 2 rho, so the minus will get you a plus 2. So you get 2 times this expression. When you get 2 times this expression, you see that these will cancel those, and you get minus 2 epsilon phi x, which will cut one of these and get minus. So when you reverse it in time, you get exactly epsilon de Laplacian. So this equation will, what I'm saying is that now if you replace rho in this equation by this expression, you get this equation, which is an autonomous equation for phi. So what we'll understand by the equation of motion is that you let phi evolve backward in time according to this equation. You define rho by this expression. So if now compute the evolution of rho in time, you get exactly this equation. And more, you can show that as time goes to minus infinity, the solution of this equation converges to s prime of rho. So this is a bit of a miracle that you can express everything in terms, you can obtain an autonomous equation. And what's more strange, in some sense, is that if instead of working with phi, I change variables, and I call f, let's call a new variable f, as phi is equal to s prime of f. The equation we get here for phi, it's exactly the original hydrodynamic equation. And this happens in all models. And we don't understand why it happens. What's the meaning of that? But in all models, if you write the equation, this autonomous equation in terms of this variable, you get the original hydrodynamic equation. And this is how we prove that phi of t con... Some models, yeah. But in all these special models, that works. Yeah. In the class where you can solve, that happens. And this is how we prove that. Because, in the original equation, hydrodynamic equation, you remember that rho bar was a fixed point. So f will be converged to that, and therefore phi will converge to this expression. So as I said, you define u as given by that. U, it's also the pair now is the solution of the canonical equation. You know that phi converges to s prime, and therefore u will converge, phi xx will vanish, and you prove that u will converge to rho bar when times goes to minus infinity. So this manifold here is playing the role of the unstable, and it can show that phi and u, defined in this way, converge to the fixed point. Well, exactly. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Well, now we can repeat in a rigorous way what we did informally. So let's prove the upper bound. these are the ingredients I will need to prove the upper bound. Remember that S prime rho minus phi solves the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, which has this form, and that the action functional can be written in this way, where H is the solution of this equation. And moreover, well, if you take time derivative here in this for this functional along any trajectory, what you get is this expression, which means that if U is the solution of the, well, if phi is the solution of the DLF equation, or if you are following the equation of motions, this expression vanishes, and therefore you have this difference given by only this piece, which it's just sorry. Which it's exactly, this will play this is H. So this is exactly what we had before in the informal description. So now we have everything we need to prove the upper bound. You fix a rho. What you need to show is that there exists a trajectory U for which I of U is bounded by S of rho, and a trajectory which connects the fixed point to rho in the infinite time interval. So with that rho fixed, you solve the DLF equation and you find phi. Now, remember that you want to follow the equation of motions. The equation of motions are given here, so I just rewrote it here. And I want to compute the cost of this trajectory. Well, if I want to compute the cost of the trajectory, I need to express U as the solution of this equation. So I need here a plus epsilon UX. So what I'll do is just I'll introduce sigma, well, the second derivative of S. So S second, it's exactly 1 over sigma, so they will cancel, and this will give you a minus. So we can rewrite this evolution as this one by introducing this term. So now I wrote U in terms, in the terms I need in order to express the cost of this trajectory in the time interval minus t0. It's given by, so H now it's sigma S prime minus phi. So I have here the cost of this trajectory. Well, let's take this equation and multiply it on both sides by S prime U minus phi. So what we get, it's, well, first I have UT S prime minus phi. And then on the right-hand side, I have E epsilon U XX minus sigma times S prime. And here we'll integrate by parts once, so we'll get plus and sigma S prime squared now. So if I observe here that we have S prime minus phi square, so this is exactly this expression. And on the other hand, I know, remember that S prime minus phi is the solution of the Hamilton-Jacobi equation, so this expression is equal to zero. So this expression is exactly the one which appears here, without these two epsilon, with epsilon instead. So one of them goes away, so it remains epsilon times this expression, which is exactly what appears here. So the cost is given by UT S prime. And this is exactly the difference. So if I now let T converge to plus infinity, this will converge to G of rho bar times S prime, and this expression will be bounded by so this proves the upper bound. Okay. Well, in 2 minutes, I won't have time to explain the lower bound, but it's essentially in the same. What I mean is that once you, this is the main, the main step. Once you perform that, you can just justify everything you did at the formal level for the canonical equation of motions. Well, thank you very much.